Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
So for me to be able to go, oh, no. Now, what is this? God tells me my worth and value is in Jesus Christ. That's number one.
Ron Deal on Focus on the Family Minute, sharing how finding your identity in Christ helps you better love your spouse.
We always say go vertical before you try to do the horizontal. So you remember who you are in Christ. Okay, with that, I also know Nan loves me, and she can be upset or irritated in any given moment. That's not the end of us. We'll get through this. I may have something to learn. I can reflect on that. We'll find our way through. Just relax. Like, all of that sounds simple. But when your brain neurologically sets off on a pathway of doing what it knows to do, reacting how it knows to react, it is not simple to slow that thing down and go, whoa, 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 what's the truth and how do I live out of it?
Hear more from Ron and his wife, Nan, about keeping God first in your marriage when you stop by FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Hi, it's Alex at Glenn's Repair and Rental. Weeds are growing taller and days are getting longer, so come on by and get a Honda gas-powered lawnmower while supplies last. For all you vineyard growers, we have a chipper that fits perfectly between those vineyard rows to help mulch up all those winter trimmings. We have a large variety of rental equipment, from mini skid steers and excavators to tillers and riding mowers. We also have log splitters, chainsaws, trenchers, and trimmers, so come on by Glenn's Repair at 5025 El Camino Real in Atascadero.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, the rest of the story. What an extraordinary day that was for the folks on Southwest 45th Street in South Miami, Florida. A remarkable thing, for the residents had been watching with great interest as the railroad tracks were laid on the lot at 5757 Southwest 45th. Railroad tracks in an area completely isolated from rail traffic. But then, September 5, 1986, suddenly it all made sense. Sort of. For the railroad siding had been installed to accommodate what was delivered that day, a 50,000-pound vintage 1969 Seaboard System railroad caboose, a real caboose, just sitting there on Southwest 45th Street. Its intended use? Well, that is the rest of the story. Ever since the spring of that year, some local people have sought the assistance of the First National Bank of South Miami for the purpose of establishing a new bank in the area, a bank dealing exclusively with low and fixed income depositors, an institution in which one need not feel ashamed to have an account of no more than several dollars. And thus was proposed the establishment of the Twiglet Bank of South Miami, a subsidiary of the First National. Too small to call a branch, or for that matter even a twig, so they called it the Twiglet Bank. Well, now this bank had a home, a railroad caboose, on Southwest 45th Street. And yet obstacles remained. The railroad car had to be remodeled, for example, and that was no small project. In fact, it was not until September 14 the following year that Twiglet, chairwoman of the board, Nikki Russell, and the president and CEO, Richard Bell, approached First National for a $2,500 loan to help cover the estimated $5,000 required for renovation. Bell convinced the head of First National's loan department that Twiglet was good for the payback. If these sound like small numbers, it was a big project when you consider. Matter of fact, President Bell was so convincing that First National sprang for another $2,500, covering the Twiglet renovation costs completely. Now, that was a year and a half ago. And since then, the loan has been repaid in full. And the executive core and staff of the Twiglet Bank of South Miami is in place. Operations are proceeding as smoothly as possible as it gets into the banking business. It's just a bank like any other, with checking and savings accounts, regulations and requirements, licensed by the state to make loans and pay interest, secured by surveillance cameras and a corps of four security guards, staffed by customer service and account representatives, by operations clerks and tellers, led by an auditor and an operations supervisor, and a crack board of directors. But there's one difference of which you are as yet unaware. For the customers of the Twiglet Bank of South Miami are on lower fixed incomes for very good reason. They are children. All and only children. The bank in the caboose on Southwest 45th is for grammar school youngsters only. And not one person who works there, from the tiniest teller to the president himself, may be beyond the age of elementary school. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And today we put up an opinion by Greg Haskin. It's called Uncovering San Luis Obispo County's Campaign Finance Cover-Ups. So today my guest is Greg Haskin of CoLab. What did you think about this big dust-up for those that don't know, there is PACs in our county do not have a limit on how much they can spend, but they have some rules and things that they're supposed to do. And there was a PAC created, and it appeared to be created just to help Jimmy Paulding. All the money they reported they spent $13,000. And some of it went to consultants, but the bulk of it, almost $11,000, was spent on Jimmy Paulding's election. They have tens of thousands more to spend. And then they got caught not having a PAC that was for having a bunch of candidates and not just one candidate. So then they went back and they said, oh no, we've changed it. Now, can you imagine? You've got the receipts, you already spent the money, you already reported you spent the money, but now you say, I didn't really spend the money, I actually spent it on this guy. I don't know how you do that.
You're right, Karen, and it is really, really a bad thing that this is going on. But the rules say if you're a multi-candidate committee, you have different means of disclosure than if you're a single candidate focused political action committee or PAC. And they were acting as a single focus just for Jimmy Paulding, which was kind of a repeat of what they did for him in his first supervisorial election. And so they weren't disclosing who was giving the money. And that's a sort of a key component to political disclosure for campaign finance. is where is the money coming from? And they were keeping it secret, and so they were spending all this money to promote Jimmy Paulding, and nobody in the public was able to figure out where the money was coming from, who was behind it. And so they got caught. I hope that Dan Dow, our county district attorney, prosecutes them for it. I hope the Fair Political Practices Commission investigates it and also pursues the penalties that they can impose, because these kinds of things, when people abuse the law like that, we all pay the price. Because we're being lied to, and it's a hit and run thing. They come in late, they raise the money, they spend the money, and then they fold up their tent the day after the election, and nobody holds them accountable. So this is a way to hopefully bust somebody for doing the wrong thing.
And one of the things I found interesting here, so Jimmy says, I'm not going to help developers, people that build houses, but I will help people that get consulting contracts with the county decide who's going to be coming in.
Yeah.
And so he's deciding what group of people he doesn't want to have influence on our elections. And I would rather have everybody just be upfront and honest about who's giving you the money and where it's going.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the way the rules should work these days is that if somebody writes a check to support a candidate on Tuesday, it should be fully disclosed by Wednesday, and there's no question about where it came from. But Jimmy is an interesting cat because, he makes a big fuss about Adam Verdin, who's running against him, having support from developers. You know, as if developers are bad people. Developers are builders. Developers build the houses that we live in. They build, the shopping centers that we shop in. They build the roads. They build all of our infrastructure. So what's so bad about a developer in the first place? And then Paulding, makes a big deal about saying he doesn't accept donations from builders, or from, well, he calls them developers. And yet he's glad to receive all kinds of maxed out donations from labor unions, for example. And, his reasoning for not taking money from developers is that he's making land use decisions, and their donations might influence his decision about whether they can get land use permission or not. Well, how about all the labor contracts that the county's going into, and Jimmy's maxed out on all those donations from all the labor unions? It's the same deal. And I think the reason he says he won't take money from developers is that no developer wants to give him any money in the first place.
Oh, I don't think they do either. I think that is part of this. Let's talk a little bit about, you wrote, first of all, for those that don't know, CoLab has a newsletter they put out every week, usually on Sunday. And they talk about some of the things that are important to the county. Everyone can read it. Just go to Slow County CoLab and look up their weekly newsletter. You talked a little bit about the Cochetti Bridge.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, this is just a bridge to a group of 60-some homeowners in one area. And they have been having to go take a longer route out of their neighborhood, maybe another 5-10 minutes to get out for some times while they try to fill this. Jimmy was putting up a temporary bridge and having the county fund the temporary bridge.
Yeah. So the Cochetti Bridge is just south of Arroyo Grande out in the Wasna area. And it actually was never a bridge. It was a culvert crossing. And in the storms of 2023, it washed out. And so the people that live out there have to take a longer route to get into town. There are some concerns about big trucks. And, it's an ag area. And so some big trucks come in and out hauling agricultural produce and so forth. So Jimmy, at the very last minute in our budget process a year ago, was able to insert $250,000 into the budget. There was no accountability for it. It was literally the last minutes as they were finalizing the budget, he tossed this in. And so people agreed to invest $250,000 for a temporary bridge. And when it came time to actually build that temporary bridge, well, the price tag was actually over $700,000. And Jimmy asked for that much money from the county budget to cover the whole thing. And it also turned out that the temporary bridge that they had in mind would have to be removed during each rainy season and then replaced again. The new bridge won't be built until late next year or the following year. So anyhow, our conservative supervisors, Pichong and Moreno, just said it wasn't worth that much money out of the county budget for a temporary bridge. And so they did not fund the bridge that Paulding wanted. And so Paulding did a little runaround. He found some money in another project that should have gone to already approved projects, but he was able to, with his two other colleagues on the board, reroute that money. So the temporary bridge was funded, and then Adam Verdin came along, and he worked with a local engineering firm, and they got a much better bridge, a portable bridge that can be used in the future. It's longer, it's wider. It doesn't need to be taken out during the rainy season. So Verdin really saved the day and got the county a much better deal than the deal that Paulding sort of set up to begin with. Paulding's still taking credit for the bridge, but it's really Adam Verdin that got us the better deal.
Yes, and this bridge can also doesn't have to be moved, though, when it rains.
Right, yeah. So that's not only the construction costs, but there would be extra costs to remove and replace the bridge every couple of years or every few months, depending on what the weather was doing. So the one that Adam set up is a longer, a more safe bridge. And when the new bridge is built, this one that Adam secured will be able to be used in other places where we need temporary bridging.
And this happens quite a bit in this county.
It does. It happened a lot in North County at Chimney Rock during the same storms. And in fact, there was a community in North County out by the lake that couldn't commute by road for a while. They had to commute by boat to get over to the other side of the lake in order to drive into town.
It would be nice to have, for when these bridges go out, to have something that others can use. I want to bring up another thing about Jimmy. He came out and he's put out a lot of literature saying that he is responsible for the sheriff's substation.
Right.
And that's another one. Lynn Compton had a lot to do with it, but before her, this has been going on for 20 years. It was not, this was not a project started by Jimmy Paulding in any regards.
Right. Yeah. Our county is pretty spread out, and there's been a need for a sheriff's substation in the South County for a couple of decades, and the County Board of Supervisors has been working on the issue. They've been working with the sheriff's department and so forth. They had some challenges in finding the right location for it. They finally found it. They got it all kind of teed up and ready. And when Jimmy was sworn into the Board of Supervisors 3.5 years ago, he took up the charge, but it was already full steam ahead, and he just kind of helped get it over the finish line. Now he's taking full credit for the whole deal, and that's kind of typical of Jimmy's style, is to try to be everything to everyone, and including the savior of the sheriff's department for a South County substation that he really didn't start.
I don't think all public officials do this. I've seen a lot that say when they get in, and they will thank the person before them that helped bring this forward.
Yeah.
They don't have this need to say it's all about me.
Well, Jimmy's been doing the same thing with, our county fire services are a bit understaffed. And so most of our fire trucks are manned right now by two fire personnel rather than three, which is sort of the standard. And the county's been working on this for a couple of years. They finally got it set up to where we can have three personnel on a lot of our county fire trucks, which is a great thing. But it took a lot of work by a lot of people, and Jimmy did not lead that charge in any shape or form. It was the entire Board of Supervisors that worked on the topic, but he's taking credit for it. And I personally, I'd be a little embarrassed for taking credit for things I didn't do, but he's a different kind of guy than I am.
And there are some people that believe him when he says these things.
Well, you know, he's a good storyteller, and he's very personable, and he gets out there and shakes hands and you know, mentions his great success with the South County Sheriff's Station or the fire department and other things. And, you know, nobody's sort of challenging him on it, but I think Adam Verdin offers a good sort of alternative to that sort of thing.
And you had another article in your newsletter this week. It was more free rider waste of taxpayer funds. And I did not realize that the appeals were not paying for themselves.
No, it's outrageous.
Let's explain what this was. This was a home in Los Osos. And there are people in Los Osos that fight everything.
Yeah.
Every single thing. They don't want any development. And they just appeal everything. But the appeals, I didn't realize, they don't cover the cost of the appeal.
No. An appeal, what this is if you get a building permit and you live in Los Osos, even if it's for an internal refurb of your kitchen or if you're fixing your rotten deck or if you're wanting to add on a bedroom or, you know, some structure, you have to get a permit from the county. And every permit that the county issues gets challenged by this group in Los Osos. And so the appeal to the permit costs the county between $8,000 and $13,000 to process. Now, if you appeal a permit for anywhere outside of the coastal zone, you have to pay a $2,000 fee, which goes towards that $8,000 to $13,000 worth of work. But in the coastal zone, you get a free appeal. And so why shouldn't they appeal all these things? And none of their appeals really hold water. You know, they make these outrageous claims, and then when the appeal is considered, it's proven that those claims don't really add up.
And this one, they had nothing in there that was legitimate.
Right.
It was just, it slowed down the project,
yeah,
cost the homeowner more money,
absolutely,
and cost the county.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more with Greg Haskins of Slo County CoLab.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending sharply higher on Middle East peace hopes, with the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notching fresh record closes. The price of oil moderated and is trading at a two-week low, with West Texas Intermediate crude at around $95 a barrel. Most all of the 11 S&P 500 sectors were higher, with tech and industrials the best performers, while energy lagged. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were higher across the board, led by NVIDIA and Meta. And chipmakers took off, with shares of Advanced Micro Devices jumping 18% after posting stronger sales and higher profit in its latest quarter. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and NVIDIA. The Dow decliners, Chevron, Salesforce, and IBM. The Dow rising 612 points. The NASDAQ higher by 513. S&P 500 up 106. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Midstate Precious Metals is open Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Atascadero, across from the movie theater. If you're looking for an appraisal or quote, on your gold or silver, go see Ron at Midstate Precious Metals for a free quote. With gold and silver at an all-time high, this is the time. They are one of the highest-paying bullion dealers on the West Coast, and they can walk you through the steps to buy and sell with no commitment. Check them out at MidstatePreciousMetals.com or stop by anytime in Atascadero, Tuesday through Friday. Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. And the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Greg Haskin, San Luis Obispo CoLab. We are talking about a number of things going on with government and our county, and I really want to get into this. I found this extraordinary. As many of you know, the California Coastal Commission was created by the Coastal Act, and the idea, the man that created it actually said during his speeches, you can't go in and do things that violate, for example, things that State Parks is doing. But then they were suddenly, we want to stop any growth near the coast and let houses fall into the ocean and make it open to everybody, and let's just change the coastline. That is not what the Coastal Act says. They also tried to stop the Oceano Dunes and stop that. Over the last 4 or 5 years, they have been in trouble by local courts over and over and over again, with judges saying, you have overstepped your bounds, you're not doing it right. Then there was an issue in Los Osos. And what happened at this issue in Los Osos, there was this woman that owned this property, and she hired Jeff Edwards and said, will you break this into 8 lots? He broke it into 8 lots, residential lots for her, and then she sold it to another man. I think his name is Shea. And Shea bought the property and then applied to build 8 houses. He wanted to build 4 now and 4 after the sewer was in. The Board of Supervisors approved it, and the same people that appeal everything appealed it. And then the Coastal Commission said, you don't know exactly when that sewer will be in, so we're going to stop it. So the man built his 4 homes, and then he went back and applied to build the other 4, and they said, well, now we found a snail. There's a snail that's only in that area, and it's actually just a regular snail, but it's got an extra color on one ring. And because of that, it's a different type of snail, and it's endangered. And so they said, you can on that one lot, but you can build the other 3 homes. Well, and of course, they appealed it again. And the Coastal Commission said, no, we don't want him building those homes. And he took it to a local judge here, and the judge said, I'm going to agree. The Coastal Commission is saying this is their interpretation of the Coastal Act. And then they took it to the appellate court in Ventura, and they agreed with them. Then it went to the Supreme Court of California, and they said, what is wrong with you? It's a 5-0 vote that you cannot let the Coastal Commission tell a judge how to interpret the Coastal Act when you should be able to interpret it because you are the judge. So what? And this is big because now it's the Supreme Court also ordering courts not to do this anymore. How big do you think this is going to end up being?
I hope it's huge. It's hard to say. You know, the Coastal Commission's interpretation is anything that allows them to do what they want to do. That's the way they interpret the Coastal Act, and that's the way that they make their decisions. And it is really harmful for people that live within the coastal zone, which is 1,500 feet from the coastline, to do anything, you know, with their own private property. Private property rights are the last thing that the Coastal Commission is ever concerned about. And whatever they want, they just demand it. To me, one of the best things, and it almost should become a national holiday, is when the Coastal Commission had to apologize recently to Elon Musk for weighing in and bossing him around and complaining about his politics and saying because they don't like his politics, they're going to limit the kind of launches that he could do down at Vandenberg. I mean, that was just the ultimate arrogance.
And it's the same thing, though. For those that don't know, they're approving coastal permits, and they're declining them on Elon Musk because of who he hung out with and what his views were. And this was had to do with Vandenberg. We need this.
Yeah. And, I mean, they put it on the record. They made these remarks about how they didn't like his politics. They thought he was hopping around the country promoting stuff that they didn't like. And so for that reason, they were going to punish him. And, you know, what is really outrageous is that, first of all, you probably haven't read about it in the newspaper because it's not being covered very much, but it's a big thing. And more than that is that nobody's calling for these people that made these outrageous comments and made this outrageous ruling to resign. They should actually be fired from the job. It's really way out of line what they did, and it's reflective of the kinds of decisions they're making all of the time. They just got caught on this one. And the reason they got caught was because Elon Musk could afford the legal fees that it took to bring this to light. But the average person who has a nice little family home somewhere in the coastal zone and wants to do something and gets ripped off by the Coastal Commission, they can't go out and hire big law firms and fight them. So they just have to roll over.
And I do agree that Elon Musk had the money, but those two things coming back to back.
Yeah.
The way that they have been talking, they've also said that when they were talking about closing down the Oceano Dunes, they were making comments, do we really want this kind of people? So that you had people circling the parking lot outside the Coastal Commission meeting, and they were in trucks, and they had, some of them had Confederate flags. Yeah. And they said, are these the kind of people we want along the coastline? Guess what? You don't get to say that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, their kind of people, those are the ones they want. But if they're not comfortable with your kind of people, they're going to do everything they can to run you out of town.
And the idea of the Coastal Act was to make sure the coast was open to everyone, right, from the valley, from the mountains. It's not only people of a certain political persuasion, right, or a certain lifestyle or a certain economic standing.
Well, and you know, the dunes were that whole recreation area was created because there were a bunch of areas around the state in some very environmentally sensitive areas that couldn't sustain off-road vehicle recreation. So they decided to sort of consolidate some of those, and they created the off-road vehicle park down at the dunes, and they promised people in that in the off-road community that this is where you can come and enjoy, you know, your hobbies and enjoy the outdoors, and we're going to make this open to you. And so they got the dunes, and now they're trying to close it. And so they're just saying, essentially, you know, if you're somebody that likes to do that sort of a thing, they're saying you're really undesirable. We don't want you around, and we don't care how much money you bring to the community. We don't care about your rights to access. We don't want you here.
And well before the Coastal Act and they went into the dunes, there were already cars on the dunes. Before, yeah, it was a state park, it was an area. And for those that haven't been there, the wind blows there. Oh, you're not going to have people laying there on the beach in a windstorm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's a very tiny portion of our enormous beachfront in this state. And, you know, it's pretty much just empty dunes. So it's not like there's a lot of habitat that's being infected or impacted. There's the snowy plover for a couple of months out of the year down in the waves and in the very wet part of the sand. But otherwise, you know, it's a good place to do that kind of thing.
And they were temporarily shut down. Let me explain what happened. It's been decades and decades. They were required to do an EIR regarding the snowy plover. They were also required to do some permitting. They didn't do it. State parks didn't do it and didn't do it and didn't do it. They dropped the ball, and then they finally said, we're not giving you any more time. You're not going to have cars on the dunes until you get the permit thing done. It's not permanent. It's supposed to be opening back up soon. But there is a temporary stop. Basically, state parks didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, so we have one state agency, the Coastal Commission, suing another state agency, our state parks, and we're all paying the price for it.
And every time anyone sues the Coastal Commission regarding state parks, there is an indemnity agreement. What I mean by that. So if the Friends of the Oceano Dunes sues the Coastal Commission for a bad ruling or something they did they shouldn't have, guess what? State Parks pays for it. So it's the taxpayers paying for all these legal actions.
Yeah. These government agencies that sue other government agencies, it's a racket, and it's just outrageously expensive. I mean, the attorneys, there's nobody checking to see if they're getting good value from their tax dollars for attorneys' fees and for settlements and for all of the various kinds of memos of understanding that it generates. It's all done in darkness, and it's all very expensive.
Absolutely. I have a question, and you might not know this. I know they're working on the Dana Reserve, and that's going to be a huge project. Uh-huh. There should be a ton of facility fees. And for those that don't know what that means, when you build a new development, you build new houses, you have to put into a facility fee. And then that goes, some of it sometimes goes to build a county building, but more often it's facilities in like substations, parks, things in your area. Can they use that facility fee for road work also, or do you know?
I believe they are doing it. Actually, some of the contingencies on the approval for the project included improving a number of intersections down there. So it will be road work and also be water. The Dana Reserve project is bringing in some pretty big improvements to the water facilities and the water infrastructure in Napomo.
Can they put some of that toward widening the highway?
I don't think so, but I don't know the exact answer to that. I think, you know, the funds going to widening the highway is all through Caltrans, and I don't think that Caltrans can, unless there's a direct impact, like if they're putting in an overpass or some kind of an ingress egress to the highway itself, I don't think that there's a direct connection financially.
I was hoping, but I had a feeling it wouldn't go there. Yeah. And now that we have, I don't know if they're keeping an eye on the facility fees. We had decades here where you had Adam Hill and Supervisors Bruce Gibson taking facility fees from Napomo and spending them in their areas until it was caught and stopped.
Yeah.
And some of the money was clawed back.
Yeah. And Gibson still works that angle to try to get as much money as he can for his district at the cost of people living in other districts. And it's a very irritating thing for many of the other members of the Board of Supervisors, not just the more conservative ones. So I'll just leave it at that.
And what do you think about what's going on in San Simeon right now that never, and for those that don't know, San Simeon is trying to divest. That means they no longer can be a community service district. It fell apart primarily when they broke them into districts. They can't even get people to run for the districts. They have too small an area. They don't have enough people to be on the board, and a lot of financial misconduct. But the county just keeps dragging it out and asking for more money.
Yeah, and it's a two-edged sword because we should have seen this coming. I think a lot of people in San Simeon saw this coming several years ago and tried to ring the warning bell, and nobody was paying attention. But, you know, the county is doing what it can to slough off some of its responsibility to these various community service districts. And some community service districts are doing okay with it, but others are having a real challenging time both getting the financial resources they need and, in fact, getting the leadership to kind of make all the things happen in the community that they need to. You look at the Templeton TAG, the Templeton Area Community Service District, and they've had fights where, I mean, they almost become physical, and they've had people resign because it's getting so nasty, and And, you know, in St. Simeon, they can't even get people to run for leadership positions. So something's got to be done to restructure the format so that we can get community people in, kind of calling the shots in their own neighborhoods.
Mike Brown had said when the economy gets this bad and the way these community service districts are not going to be able to afford to be there and they need to go back to just having advisory groups and being divested. He predicted probably 5 years ago this was going to start happening. We're going to take a break, a word from our sponsor, and be back with one more segment with Greg Haskins.
Junior, you know why my TV is turned down so low? Last week, I went down to see Peter Lussier at Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast. He's a nice young feller who tested my hearing. He had me try on these nearly invisible hearing aids. See? They ain't got no buttons or nothing. By gum, I hear like I'm 29 years old. Call Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists. Dial 805-460-7385. Or use your smartphone and go to slowcountyhearingaids.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Danny from Paso Tile and Stone, where elegance is made affordable. You know, actually, people have told me, I miss your commercials. Well, this commercial is a thank you commercial for all the contractors. We have 35 regular contractors that buy from us consistently. Thank you to them. Thank you for the homeowners for all the repeat business. We had a great year last year, an increase of 33%. So thank you for that. How about we celebrate by giving you prefabs for $99? We have tile for 99 cents. We have luxury vinyl for $1.99 to $2.99. We have buy one, get one free slabs. So come on down to our showroom for our tile and slabs, 3850 Ramada. And for luxury vinyl and cabinets, please come to 447 North Main Street, Templeton. Blessings to you and your family. Thank you.
I am Central Coast Attorney Dave Derringer, and I believe in faith, family, and freedom. Without faith and family, there is no freedom. So the mission of my law firm, Protective Law Corporation in Morro Bay, is to help families grow family power by transmitting life, fortune, and honor to descendants. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all trusts are not created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain alienable rights, that among these are powers to defer, avoid, or shift taxation, to shelter assets from creditors, that to secure these rights, trusts are created by me. If you are serious about asset protection and family protection, call me, Dave Derringer of Protective Law Corp in Morro Bay. Dial 805-225-5105. Or just click on my phone number at lawnews.tv. Again, lawnews.tv, LAWNEWS.TV.
The Downtown Paso Robles Main Street Association is pleased to announce the annual Paso Robles Olive and Lavender Festival this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the downtown city park. Enjoy everything the olive and lavender industries have to offer. Demonstrations, arts, crafts, collectibles, food, and more. The annual Paso Robles Olive and Lavender Festival this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the downtown city park. Admission is free. More info at pasorobles.downtown.org.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Greg Haskin. We're going over all kinds of things going on in the county, from the elections to housing to what the Board of Supervisors is doing to the Coastal Commission. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Greg today?
Well, I don't understand how Bruce Gibson's constituents want to keep supporting him when he wants to destroy Prop 13, which is going to hurt all of the small businesses in his area.
That's a great question. I wish I had the answer for that. I think Prop 13 is one of the most important things that we've got going to protect everybody in California, and people like Gibson would love to get rid of Prop 13 and start taxing, you know, he would love to have a tax the rich kind of a program. So if you had a house that was worth anything more than, say, $600,000 or $700,000, he'd love to just rake in all the money he can get out of you.
Yeah, and his constituents, of course, before they went back to the old redistricting, he narrowly got in on the vote because he fooled a few people in Atascadero. But it wasn't that he fooled the people. It's that he got the Democratic Party to fund to help fund his campaign.
Yeah,
and why did the Democratic Party be so stupid? I don't know.
Well, they are desperate to keep hold of the power in the county board of supervisors, but Gibson's riding off into the sunset, and he's hired who he hopes is going to be his replacement, Jim D'Antona, and so he's trying to keep a little, you know, finger on the pulse. We don't know yet what Gibson's going to do when he retires, but he says he's going to remain in the public policy arena in some form. It's fascinating to think about how that might play out.
Yeah. Okay, well, have a good day.
Thank you very much for calling in. So what can people do to get the word out? How can they work to keep this county running cleanly with the best people involved?
Well, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to get involved in the elections that are coming up just a few weeks from now. There's still a lot of precinct walking going on. There are some rallies, and you can still hold a little get-together in your community for a lot of candidates. I've done that in the past, and I know the candidates really love it. If you have, depending on who's running in your area, you invite them to come to your home for an hour or two some afternoon, and you invite a number of neighbors. If you can get 15, 20 neighbors together and have a little discussion, a meet and greet for the candidate, serve some coffee or cookies or something like that. And it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be formal, but it's a good way for outreach. Otherwise, you know, call up the county party headquarters. They have all kinds of roles for you to play, whether you're helping out to stuff envelopes or being election observers or, you know, making phone calls. There are yard signs that you can put up, and you should really do what you can to get involved, meet the candidates personally, and then, you know, share what you learn with your friends and neighbors, and help get the word out about, you know, what is so important to get the right people in office.
It is, this is a very important election. And again, the majority of the Board of Supervisors is at stake at this election.
Yeah, it's a nonpartisan office. They don't have an R or a D next to them on the ballot, but you sure see the difference between the people from one party to the other party in the kind of policies that they're adopting. And, you know, we talked earlier about transportation, and one side of the aisle is not very interested in funding a lot of transportation projects in the county. The other side of the aisle thinks it should be a high priority.
That is one of the biggest differences that they have.
Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing it too in housing and taxation, fees. We see it on a lot of levels, and we've kind of left common sense in the dust lately at our county board of supervisors, and that's what I think a lot of people are looking for, is a return to more common sense.
I do think it's going to be a very, very interesting election. I don't have a good pulse on who is going to win. Tomorrow we're going to have Michael Aaron Woody on the show, so you can ask him some questions. He's running against Jim D'Antona for the District 2 supervisor seat currently held by Bruce Gibson. And Jim D'Antona is Bruce Gibson's choice, while a lot of people with the wind energy and in Morro Bay support Michael Aaron Woody.
And, you know, the dynamic in this race is very interesting, because I think, you know, D'Antona's counting on a strong Democrat turnout. He's going to identify with all the Democrat voters. He's going to say, I am the Democrat in this race. We need your support. We need you to to vote Democrat, be loyal to the party. Michael Allen Woody is a declined estate, but he is very involved with the anti-wind energy, offshore wind energy program, and very much opposed to putting battery storage in Morro Bay and that kind of thing. And there's a very, very active group, grassroots group, that has been involved with that issue, and they're all behind him. And so we don't know if it's going to be, you know, grassroots prevailing, or if it's going to be the money that D'Antona's raising and the partisan get out the vote. But it will come down to, you know, where the community sees the two candidates. And I'm with you. I can't really call that race either. And even, you know, the Paulding-Verdin race is going to be, or has the potential of being very close, because Paulding is an incumbent. He's in a position to take a lot of credit for a lot of things, whether he deserves the credit or not. He's been maximizing his taking credit for things. And people that aren't paying a lot of close attention are going to think Paulding's doing a great job. So, there's a dramatic difference between the two candidates, but I don't know if people are paying close enough attention to really appreciate that.
And for those that aren't aware, Wind Energy had so there were three different groups that bought out the leases off the shores of California with the federal government. I think it was around $250 million each. And what is happening now is Golden State was one of those. Golden State recently, the Trump administration bought out their lease. And they said, we're going to give you the money back on that, but you've got to agree that you're going to spend it on natural gas and oil projects in the U.S. They went for it. They're doing it. There's work with the other, at least one of the other ones right now. There's some push to get them to do the same thing. Meanwhile, then you have the pro-energy people coming back. This is the one. I'll give you a couple interesting things. So I get an email from someone from Cal Poly, and they said, we've already trained 300 people that were going to work for Golden State. First of all, the things aren't going to be built for about 15 years if it started moving fast. Second of all, after they're built and up, there's only going to be 250 jobs total for all three of the different wind farms. So I don't know why they would have already trained 300 students at Cal Poly for a job that is decades away and is going to be less than 300 people when it's done. It doesn't make sense.
That can be their retirement job.
It just, and then I also, yesterday, State of California said we are going to start investigating if we can sue Trump because we spent $100 million. Yes, you gave grant money, you did studies, you paid consultants, you built nothing. You did nothing, yeah. But you spent $100 million promoting the offshore wind and trying to get this through. And I don't think you're going to be able to sue Trump to get your money back.
Well, and after all that money and all that effort and everything else, we never really did have actual numbers of how much it was going to cost to produce wind energy. We didn't have any cost estimates of how much it would cost to build these plants and all the infrastructure and everything else. We didn't have any kind of cost or even engineering detail about what size the windmills were going to be. They grew enormously, how many of them were going to be out there. You know, they started out with just a few, and then later on we found out they were talking about potentially hundreds of windmills offshore. We had no information about the impact to offshore wildlife, fisheries, that kind of thing. It was all dreamland, and nobody really held anybody accountable for anything.
And they're saying that the life of those was going to be less. They were going to be way more expensive, at least 9 times more expensive than the energy we have now. But again, one has already been, one is already over. The other one is in the works. I think there's a good chance within the next 6 months, this is no longer going to be part of something our county has to be afraid of. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Karen. We'll be right back.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.